folks. Welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast, a Jaybird.
Steven.
What's cooking?
The Ides. What's cooking me back in
what?
back in the southern heat?
Ugh. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
I have
enjoy.
My little respite. Get back from Canada. Got just a couple days to get her together here. I had to text Jay, as he can attest. Hey, spooling reels, give me an extra 15 here.
Yep.
And it just never ends. I'm 3.5 minutes away, Jay, from just like freaking taking every bait I have and just throwing it in the trash. I'm so sick of dealing with baits. That was the story of my day.
The whole,
well, you've been on the rig there.
Yeah.
And it's to be seasonal. I have so much crap, and to be seasonal, or where I'm going or what I'm fishing. Oh,
a little
God.
Bit of a rotation going on right now.
Hell on earth. And then when I'm in Canada, it's what's hot, what's not, what do I need to be throwing. So I come back, I got a cooler full of baits top to bottom that I just chuck on the deck, on the dock. Like if I've worked something and I don't like it, I just make this pile next to my slip for a month. I paid the price.
Good clean mess is what
I pay the price for everything. Well, it's cool. The cool thing with bucktails, what I do, I just grab my nippers and cut them all up, and they go back in the parts department, you know?
Yep,
and I don't mean back to the shop, but at the house and but gosh, you just get
you've got all that flush storage. It's not like you know you're taking out a box and just throwing in a different box.
Oh God, no! I hate
the main storage up by your front casting deck. There's a lot of bait.
There's
storage
a lot
in
of
there.
Baits,
and
in
if you're
there.
Rotating half of that stuff,
rotating that, and then got a lot of flats for like, you know, if they're on a banshee biter on this or that, or if it's slammers or whatever, it's like I gotta have my backups there, and it's just like, oh my gosh. It is just a nightmare. Tough problems to have, but it's just kind of like one of those deals where you just want to scream. To that, though, moments, you know, because we haven't talked about it in a while. There's been so much going on. Came back from the Canada trip, and I was like, man, my Magnuses look pretty beat up, right? And this has not been that, like, Canada this year has not been swim baity. Like, Glenn McDonald, when we were up there, Danny, or everybody I know, Coop. You know, it's been really good on Krakens, because I don't even sell this. Darcy Cox over on Lake of the Woods got like four just giants. Like, he is a big, big, big Kraken guy. And
yeah, okay.
He got four just mongoloid fish on Kraken this year. He's brought that bait kind of a lot of people's attention there in the Kenora area and all that stuff, but.
Was there throughout the summer, or was there like a hot period?
He's pretty secretive, as one should be over there. So he got them, though. It's this in the peak here. But what I was getting at is, like, I'm going through the Krakens, and I'm like going through Magnus. And today with Magnus, I'm like, I'm so glad I did it that way with the freaking tails. Like, if you don't know, on that bait where you can remove the tails and replace the tails, you know, because it was a way better Kraken bite this year. But I was like, I still got munched up by a bunch of pike, and I was like, oh, thank goodness, you know, I'm not throwing these things away and just sliding that on. That was just one of my favorite moments today, where I went to hell with it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, the replaceability of stuff. And, you know, under that tip, the reason I thought of Darcy was one time he shot me a message about the skirts on the Kraken.
Yeah.
About how, hey, there's some glitter coming out, like in this early production stuff, there's glitter coming out, and I don't like to pollute the water out of the skirt, like coming, you know, because you know how we have, like, they put the glitter in at certain times, so is it embedded, or is it like just barely superficial?
Right, okay.
And that's one thing I like about that dude, because he thinks the same way. He's like, I don't want to have a negative impact. And that's one cool thing about a lot of these baits, where it's like, trying to, again, I'm not tooting the horn, but it's like with Magnus or Kraken or this, you know, this stuff of, I was going through all the baits today, Jay, and what I'm thinking about is like the sustainability and creating less waste. I know that sounds ridiculous. I'm not trying to sound like a hippie or something, but at a certain point you're going, I'm glad I'm not throwing this much just junk away, just junk rubber, you know, as far as just creating waste on that front, whatever.
Yeah,
I'll stop smoking my peace pipe. Okay. But you know, if you're supposed to be an outdoorsman, create less trash. But yeah, it's a nightmare. But the thing is this, it got me thinking today about, it's Labor Day weekend coming up. Here I'm transitioning my boat from Canada into fall, and that's where we're headed, right? And a lot of guys, I think, are going to miss the boat, the proverbial boat, if you will, when we come out of this bite and things finally have snapped loose a little bit. You know, saw some good stuff come out of Wisco, some decent stuff coming out of Canada, where it was kind of a weird year. I think everybody can admit that it wasn't like the most rock solid, predictable anything, right? Wisconsin had its trials and tribulations, water temperatures, you name it, everything, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Where here you get this first little cool down in some parts of the country, and it's coming for others, and you get this hot bite, and then what's going to happen? I'm going to tell you, Jimmy the Greek, Jay, I'm going to make my predictions here. Here's the under over or whatever, right?
Yeah.
You're going to get that little shallow movement, and then we're going to go back to unpredictability. Right?
Okay.
Where it's going to be the shallow transition, then you're going to be into turnover, and then it's going to be anybody's guess of thinking and going right back to what you had to do this summer to be successful. Because the cool thing is turnover is a reset, right? Fall turnover is a reset, kind of like the spawn is a reset. And what I mean by that is this, and I'm going to put it in your heads. So the spawn is an activity that the muskies are going to go through 99.9% of the time, regardless. It is going to happen, right? It brings them to a certain point, if you will, and then they have to redisperse and redistribute. You see what I'm saying? It brings them together, and it resets the system. Spawn resets a system where the fish congregate, and then they redisperse. Where fall turnover disrupts stagnant patterns, right? It causes muskies to move from where they were once comfortable. And I was saying it this spring, I saw it in Canada this year, I saw it everywhere I went, homebodies, right? Fish that were just
homebodies?
Lingering, okay. Right? You would have them just, okay, you caught this fish, and you go back through the same pass later in the day or the next day, it's still there. 2 days later, it's still hanging. You know what I'm saying? A lot of just like really weird positioning and patterning. So hopefully the turnover will flip the script here and kind of redistribute, right? You've got to have something that shakes the system up. And a lot of times with the turnover, you end up with disbursement and then recongregation of fish, especially bait fish. You know, because you have just basically it's like taking the table and flipping it, Jay. Right? You know, hey, you're halfway through your little puzzle there. Jay's got him a nice little puzzle with two puppies in the snow. I come through and just flip the table. Hell with your puzzle. Start again.
You're talking about a jigsaw puzzle, right?
I'm talking about a jigsaw. No, just pieces of puppies you found and you're put. Like that one time when I came in your place and you were putting them together on your table. But yes, a jigsaw puzzle, you savage. But nonetheless, it's pretty...
Analogies from heaven.
It's pretty egg-geeny up there in the Northwoods. It gets cold and sad.
Little puppies.
He's doing a puzzle. Yes, it's a cardboard puzzle intentionally caught up. Not a crime.
Hey, you said they were in the snow, too. That makes you think about it.
Oh, sweet Jesus, kill me now. Nonetheless.
Yeah, very difficult.
Nonetheless, that's the component that I just want to put out there, where there's not this clear answer of, and when this happens, do this, right? But it is to sound the alarm that the transition is coming. Do not get comfortable, right? Because July and August, funky. You get this little bit of, cool down. You get that shallow bite. Everybody's feeling their oats. Just the warning flag of we're going to go into that transition. How do we plan for that? Which is going back to the way you could stay dialed in this whole summer was you better find bait fish, right? Roaming. It was constant roaming, right?
No doubt.
Roaming everywhere. And that goes back to when you flip the script, maybe everything will stay shallow. Maybe everything's going to stay deep. It's going to be somewhere, but how are we identifying those productive areas? And like I said, it's just a good time. If you had a really good summer, it's a good time to go, okay, I can't rest on my laurels. And if you had a tough season thus far, it's a really good time to like kind of go, okay, cool. Take a mulligan, reset mentally.
Mm.
That's that, you know what I'm saying? Because there's, you know, it's funny. Never really look at it or say it black and white like that of where people in a season, but because of what people's comfort levels are with certain presentations or fishing certain types of structures, there's some people that really, really struggled. And there's some people that are adept, which is the other thing is this, and kind of the soapbox here is this year. Of anything I talked about, what kind of you're rectifying it, you're thinking about what did you learn, what did you didn't learn, you're thinking of how do you develop tactics and techniques. And realistically, just a massive reiteration of competence with electronics and comfort fishing structure. Right? So competence and confidence are the two things that absolutely kind of separated the have and have nots, or the guys that are catching, or the guys that are successful. You know, all summer kind of beating on the destination trip thing, right? Trying to, in real time, when I was calling Jay and we're doing the podcast, I'm kind of running and gunning there in Canada. And you know, all I want to do is be on the boat, you know, no offense, you know, it's like, okay, I'm going to come in and eat a sandwich. You better be ready because I'm back to casting. But
right.
Hearing and dealing with so many text messages and people, and I get it. They're calling and they're saying, hey, you know, I'm, we talked about it. It's where I'm day four into a, you might, my week long trip and I'm dick in the dirt. Right. And what do we do? And looking at that and then juxtaposing against the guys that are successful, it was definitely a different level of competency. Right. I would say that thus far, it has not been the forgiving year. Right. A lot of, you know, Johnny's Bucktail YouTube channel goes on their 1 week trip a year, and that's what their whole season is. It's like their first night in prison this year. Right. Not going well. And on the flip side of it, if there's actually a little, you know, and a lot of it is like, I'm not trying to make it an influencer thing or this guy or that guy, but it's just the thought process of when you have things that require competence, it kind of sorts, you know, life is self-sorting anyway. And this kind of musky fishing self-sorts as well. Well, these are the guys that are still catching because it's not go throw a bucktail at the weeds on opening weekend, or it's not go, you know, fish the frog water with a spinnerbait, or it's not, you know, it is a competence thing. And then the confidence component of that is that you have put the time in previously that you feel confident in your boat control. You feel confident in your presentations that you're hitting those structural elements, those unseen elements, right? Like structure fishing as a whole is if done correctly, right? And we're currently, and Jay and I were talking about, I'm really stoked about it, actually. Late fall into the winter, you're going to have these videos coming out that we've been working on all summer, right? Which is the free musky school of here's a bunch of stuff. And in structure fishing, it's like we've talked about in the podcast, talking about in the books and all this different stuff. If done appropriately, I would say it's 60-40. 40% of your cast are landing near a visual target, but 60% of them are landing nowhere near something that you can see. So that confidence and competence come from competence in boat control, competence in map interpretation, and confidence that your cast are landing where they should, and then having enough feel, which is a confidence and a competence thing, having enough feel and understanding where your presentation is running, that you're presenting appropriately to that stuff, right? So, yes, the reef tops out at 16 feet. Well, how deep does this Kraken run? How deep does this Red October run? I don't know, because I haven't put the time in, or I haven't built confidence in that presentation style.
Yeah.
And a lot of it, now, like I said, it took me a minute to kind of take a minute, take a beat, and go, what really happened? Right? What's because, you know, my timing is, I come back to this, and it's fall. And it's that, boom. I talk about the transition, the reset a minute ago, because summer is not fall, obviously, right? So I'm trying to just kind of like rectify and kind of wrap up that experience, or what, you know, because I have such an outlet and such input from other anglers that are top notch. You know, I'm talking to a dude, you know, father and sons, and I'm talking to guys that are legends. And so I'm getting that feedback. I'm filtering all this data, if you will, or all these conversations, and you talk to somebody, here's what's going on, here's what's happening in my fishing, and they might not say it, but if you read between the lines, or you listen enough to hear what they're actually saying. And I've been trying to rectify that, and it comes back to competence and confidence. Those are the two premises that I think really kind of separated the summer, right? Of also, when I say the competence is not learning your electronics on the trip, not learning how the side scan plays, having enough time and flat out practice. And that's the other thing I was going to soapbox about for a second.
Yeah.
It is so hard. How many times have we said, Jay, it is the lamest recommendation of all times to go and practice musky fishing with 0 in 10 of catching one? How do I learn a new bait class? Practice, right? Going out, yes, fishing it, but I have spent way more time not trying
How difficult it is to do that process.
I know. And it absolutely sucks.
Because you're wasting your time, right? That's unquote, what you're thinking, right, but you're right. Not.
You're not. And
it all comes around.
It pays off massive dividends.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like with talking to Herbie and Danny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this is just a truism I think of any guy. Hey, how was your day? Would have got two if. Right, and that's also too a commentary for people that are guide clients. Like if you're going to fish with somebody, you don't want to be the if. Right. So, and I say that, would have got to if the clients would have figurated. That's a baseline thing. Would have got to if they were good with tubes. Would have got to if they set the hook. So it's not even just a guy that's fishing on your own boat and you're doing your own experience, but it's also parlay or plays into a person that is like, okay, hey, I'm actively just fishing with guides to learn. So being competent on either of those fronts for the standard guy that's got his own boat and he's rocking his own adventure here is you need to go out and you need to spend the time at least once a year. Get out in the middle of the lake where you don't have to worry about a muskie. It's so, I prefer to do it where there's not even a muskie, but you know what I'm saying? It is so, it changes the premise entirely, right? It changes the perspective is what I should say. So if you're using musky baits, whether or not no muskies, or you're using them out in the middle of the ocean, right, in the middle of the lake where you don't have to in general have to worry about it, it changes your focus, right? So the premise of what you're doing is not fishing, it is learning the baits. And a lot of this was, and I bring this up, is because this summer there were a lot of people trying to make pivots. And we talked about pivots a lot. And I talked about pivots and hey, you need to be able to go from, you need to be able to go from deep weed edges to isolated humps. Or you need to be able to do this. You need to be able to make quick pivots and be competent at fishing all kinds of different structures with a bunch of different presentations to be consistently successful. This summer kind of solidified that, okay, the competency is there, but if you don't have the time doing it, right, you don't have the confidence. So is my boat in the right place? Am I presenting this Kraken correctly? Am I working a Suic right? Right? Am I ripping the rubber too fast? Am I ripping the rubber too slow? Am I not? And it's one of those things of spending half a day, 4 hours. I mean, most people peter at it for 4 hours. 4 hours of going through the box and going, okay, how does this work? What does it do? And how do I work it? And I think that's probably the biggest jump you can get right now. Because I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I could be wrong. We're into Labor Day. The leaves are going to change, and it might just be lights out fishing until ice up. I'm betting that it's going to be lights out for a minute, and then it's going to get funky again, and we're going to go back to confidence and competence are what's going to keep producing, right? So I bring that up just to kind of put it in the head, Jay.
Well, you know? There's usually not super long stretches of this pre-turnover period where it's lights out fishing, as you say. You know, that's uncommon. There are always windows, if you may, I guess, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, fishing windows in the afternoon. I'm talking about like a couple of days where everything comes together and, you know, I mean, we're seeing a little bit of that. There was excellent fishing around here earlier in the week.
Yep.
I know this weekend's been cool, dark, and kind of drizzly and east wind kind of deal. Yeah. But before that, you know, talked with some of the guides, and it was a shallow, and that whole thing was kind of starting. But water temps haven't dropped down enough, and we're not really at that pre-turnover thing yet. It's just kind of a summer. Right. Late summer cool down. So
it's a coming.
You know, what if that happens? You know, expect it to be 6 weeks long before turnover happens in the Northwoods. Usually not. You're still going to have to make serious adaptations in your fishing. That's a common plan on it.
Yeah, plan on it. I mean, that's the thing is the change is inevitable. In all, you know what I'm saying? The change is inevitable. And I say that because it's not, like you said, turnover is not going to happen tomorrow. But it's been such a up and down roller coaster of conditions and abnormal patterning. And I think, like I said, the real crux of it is, and it's not where you're at. It's not what lake am I on. That's the funny thing. And from talking to everybody that I kind of talked to on the reg, it's just been one of those. And hey, next year might just be throw a bucktail at the weeds and it's lights out all year. But it just goes to show that again, that confidence and competence are really, really the core of repeatability or being able to dig out when it's not just stupid. You know, I mean, trust me, I want freaking shallow and easy. It's much easier for me, Jay.
Like I said, repeatability is very rare. I mean, it really is, you know. Let's talk with Al Frost, you know, Frosty writes out the shop, you know. Older guy's been doing it for years and years. He's saying that just for walleye fishing, he said he's probably never seen a better consistent walleye fishing year, no matter what depth they're at. They've been, you know, well, whatever programs he's using, he's catching fish, and it's just constant. So he said, he goes, don't expect it to be like that next year.
That's the way it always is.
Made me laugh. I mean, it's true.
Well, that's the fun thing about this. If it was, I mean, I've been doing it so long. If it was the same every year, it'd be a snooze fest, right? You would just
guess
it would. And that's kind of what keeps you coming back. Luke from Quebec. Is that how you say that? Part of Canada, Quebec?
I don't think so.
Jay, believe it or not, that's where Q-Bert is from. The late, early 80s video game character, Q-Bert.
Wow. You made that up, didn't you?
Originated in Quebec. Q-Bert Beck. Anyway, hey guys, want to know, when you cut the hooks from a muskie's mouth, do you go back and remove the rest of the hook that is in the mouth? I do, but I want to know if you leave it in there, does it cause a problem for the muskie liver? Love the podcast. Thanks, Steve and Jack. Well, Luke, I always make sure that I'm getting that out. So if you know, guys always saying is you reach in there and you cut up on a 4-0 or a 7-0 to make sure to pull that other side out, right? I have often wondered if it's just going to insta fall out, but in lieu of causing damage, always get that piece out. Unless I think, let me put it this way. If I snip the hooks and the fish is, we got some blood coming out, you've hooked the thing in its body, so at times there'll be a little spurt of blood or this, that, or the other. But if you have some bleeding or any concerns that go, hey, this fish isn't doing so hot, I'll clip them, and I'm not going to go back and do like a quick
inspection. More surgery.
Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things, if I'm not trying to leave anything, if you've cut the hook, most of the time, if the barb will be through, it's penetrated. So that should just theoretically just kind of shake loose. But, I mean, a lot of times I'll snip and I'll go, okay, all that little piece there, I'll just pull it out the other side with my long nose real quick. But I prefer to do that. With that being said, it's funny. I can't remember who I was talking to. We were talking about hooks, and that was Danny.
Danny.
Yeah, we were talking about son of Herbeck. Mm-hmm. Because thank God, freaking finally I got it where we got some ripping hooks coming on the new Livingston. More on that, by the way. I would think in the Banshee restock, thank God.
Right, hey, around the corner,
hey,
right?
Hey, something I should bring up, and I'll butcher the guy's name. But I was super stoked. I looked at my junk mail of all places. I was laying in bed, looked at my junk mail. And I think it's Shayland. How would you say the guys? I apologize. But nonetheless, let me look here. Let me double check here. I'm going to check in. I'm looking in the email, folks. Right? Bear with me. We get back here. It was like last Monday. I get, wow. Daylan Shahan. Sent me an awesome email. Fishing the Banshee, got second in that big Eagle River tournament, that big Wisconsin tournament, out of 1,100 boats.
So, over 1,100 boats, yeah.
If you think that bait doesn't catch fish, there you have it. And he, I think by volume, he caught more than, and I'm not denigrating or anything, but I watched the story once on the news thing, and from his email, I think he caught more. He just got beat by an inch or two, right? Which is a tremendous testament to that bait. So thank you so much. Definitely stoked. And I love that. Probably my favorite email I've gotten in the longest time, because, you know, for me to make something in the bait cave here and it shows up and somebody's winning tournaments or placing in giant tournaments like that, that's huge. I mean, that's a ton of boats, dude. 1,100 boats.
Yeah.
And I think he got three or four. If I recall his email, I think he got three and like one was, he got a small one that didn't score or something like that. But dude, that's badass. That was just stoked. And we emailed back and forth and he was rip stomping it, right? Doing the jerk bait thing with it. So thank goodness. I would say maybe this, I don't think this coming week, but probably the week after, the restock on the Banshees are going to be there. So get them while you can. There's still probably not enough there. The other thing I'm going to tell you on the Banshees, and I'm stoked. I was able to sneak in. We'll launch it, but I was able to sneak in a new color too.
Yeah.
So there'll be a new cool little, if you already got some or if you want something in there, it'll be interesting. There's some other cool stuff coming. We'll talk about that. And there'll be videos. Trying to stay up on the video stuff on the new release. Jay should be. We're going to get the restock on the Savage, and you'll see me and Danny, son of Herbeck, did some stuff. But yeah, I want to shout out to that dude on that tournament, Daylan. That's just kind of warmed my cockles, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just
guys from Stevens Point, Wisconsin.
Yes, I'll be damned. Very cool. Down there in the point, but no, that's, I couldn't be stoked. No, that made my day. Working on secrets, Jay. Secrets time. There's gonna be a big one.
There's gonna be a big one in the new shipment coming?
No.
Is that what you're saying?
No. Soon there'll be a big Banshee. I got so much, buddy. I feel like talking about warming your feet by the fire. I got more. I feel like Santa Claus coming for 2027, buddy. Holy crap. We got some cool stuff coming. Brute, and then a bunch of stuff you don't even know about. Anyway, Nick. Hey, fellas. Been listening for years. Keep up the great work. This may be a subject you don't want to touch. Oh, great. Thank you. Wonderful. But can you explain how, why natives in the Northwoods are allowed to spear muskies? I'm unaware of how this actually came about. We saw over 45 total fish get taken from my three surrounding lakes. Okay. How? Let's keep it here. He says, how and why? Let's focus on the how. So they are self-governing. So I have some firsthand experience with a close relative that has Indian privileges. And with that, the fishing game regulations are entirely different. So they could go out and shoot a deer and, you know, in certain states or certain areas anytime they want, or, you know, different regulations apply just because you have essentially treaties between a state government and a tribe.
Right. Yeah, like century old treaties, I believe.
Right. Yeah. And so if you invent a time machine, right, don't go to Germany 1939. Go to Wisconsin when they're writing the treaty and put some protection in there for the fish. You got the Jay, you have a time machine. You can only use it once. Right? You can go to the signing of the treaty between the tribe and the state of Wisconsin, or you can go to Berlin about 1937, 1938.
That's the most common cop-out one.
Yeah. Is it? You're going to the Wisconsin.
Yeah, you got to take out Hitler in 39.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going. Mm-hmm. Jay's going. Oh, I asked Steve Herbeck. Never mind. I can't even say that. Ben and Alex, if they're listening, are probably. I asked Steve Herbeck a theoretical like that. I won't tell you what the other side said. Steve, here's the deal. You can take your boat as it sits right now. Right now, right? He's got a badass Tuffy Osprey, got great electronic, great gear. I said, you can take your boat, your engine, everything that's on this boat, to Eagle Lake in like 1950, right? Or you stop this. Well, I'll let you guess what the atrocity was. It was a good one, and his answer was quick. Anyway.
It was a quick answer. He didn't even have to think. I thought he'd ponder a little bit.
No, there's no pondering. He let me know his stance on those folks quickly. Matt, the musky daddy. I fish a fairly clear lake in northern Wisconsin. Gets hammered all summer long. By August, it seems like the muskies follow forever but rarely commit. You think these fish are being conditioned to certain baits, or is it just more about timing, the right water temperature? Would you change lure size, speed, or just keep grinding until bite windows open? Okay. So, we have a lake he's fishing that's getting hammered, in his own words, and he's getting tons of follows, and they're not committing. Do we change this? So, the question is, do we change lure size, speed, and what do we do presentation-wise? Right? If I'm standing in Wisconsin, I'm changing lakes. If we're to the point where you're saying, hey, I'm getting this body of water I'm on is just getting hammered, right? And it's just getting blasted to the point where you go, ugh. I'm going to err on the side of making a change in location, Jay, in a place like Wisconsin.
Well, you can also fine tune your mid-cast tricks.
But yeah. I mean, here's my thing, though. We talk about that quite a bit, and I'm obviously just advocate the hell out of that, right? But we're talking into late August at this point already. So if it's a small body of water, let's say it's getting hammered. I'm devil's advocate here, if you will, if you allow. Because where there's a will, there's a way. There's always a way to get a trigger from even pressured fish. If pressured fish wouldn't eat, Minnesota Metro wouldn't exist, right? But if I'm in Wisconsin, I always want to keep my mind open to trailering and going places, because I think a lot of it happens where, you know, you got your summer house or you got your house on the lake and you got your slip and it becomes easy, right? Well, I'm going to go out after dinner and go out for 4 hours and hopefully I catch one, or go out for 2 hours. I think that happens and you end up with lakes that kind of get pummeled, and I've seen it, and I say that because there's always a way, but it's like, are you fighting pressure the right way? You can fight pressure through advanced techniques, or you can fight pressure through advanced trailer driving to another lake. Right?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Of what's the best way? So, yes, you can add a mid-cast trigger. Yes, you can do this. Yes, you can do that. Or you can choose choose something or a lake less traveled or something that's a little bit off the radar for people. Because I only say that because he's saying it's getting hammered a bunch, which means it's probably popular, which means that it's probably getting guided, which means guide clients are coming back. Yada, 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 yada.
And it's ultra clear water in the baits and the baits and the baits. Mm-hmm. They're flying, they're moving, and they're blowing. And then these things are visually seeing them, not hearing them.
They're looking at them
and they're sick of it.
And getting stung. And so, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, like I said, where there's a will, there's a way. You can get a strike free. I mean, a muskie could eat a bait an hour ago and you could catch him if you got the mojo, right? I mean, I'm not saying you should. I'm not saying it happens all the time, but I've seen fish that have eaten the next day. Right? Same fish, hair hanging off the lip, freaking caught him at 8 and go back the next day at 5:30 in the morning and get him again. You go, oh man, need to change locations here, But with that being said, I'm just advocating the you're not running in tuck and tail in Wisconsin. You're fishing a little bit smarter is what I'm getting at, because you have so much water available. You know, check it out. If you're on this ultra clear stuff, find you a stained lake to fish. Right? Find a little bit more remote lake, because again, I think people are habitual. They get comfortable with it and you go, ma, because I mean, I actually talked to a friend this week this is resonating with me, because I talked to a friend this week. I was like, dude, get off that lake. You've got to frickin' trailer. You know, and it's kind of the curse of retirees too, Jay. This sounds like a young guy, but you get these guys who retire, the wife and, we're going to have a glass of wine and we're going to go sunset cruise and then we're going to go catch one after dinner. You know, well, the trailer's sitting over there with squirrels living in it, and it's, again, choose your own adventure, what you want to do. But I would recommend at least giving that a look. What else would you say that kind of pressure up there, Jay?
Well, there may be a few lakes like that, but, pressure compared to, like, where Dr. Bob lives and operates, pressure compared to, folks in, Indiana or parts of Illinois or even southern Wisconsin, no, mm-hmm. I don't buy it. I fished a million lakes around here, and there is quite a few of them that are good musky fishing that don't see much pressure at all. I'm talking middle of the summer, and that's awesome.
Well, and that's the
you and I have gone out multiple times, and it's like, we're on a 500 acre lake, let's say, and it's like, there's no one out here musky fishing right now.
I mean, we've stirred the pot up there where it's like smacking big fish. Oh, no, you didn't. And it's like, no, we're not fishing Suckatobin with the rest of you. Again, from a business standpoint this week, I think I've said the phrase twice. There's imitators and there's innovators. Right? And you got to realize it depends, again, back to choose your own adventure, not being sanctimonious, don't care, everybody's a different place. But if you're like, okay, I really want to get dialed in on muskies, or I want to catch more fish, or I want to do this, or I want to do that, right? Maybe you just want to go catch one after dinner and have one picture, who cares? But at a certain point, what happens is people flock, right? I was goading earlier about, different people filming or chasing these hot bites to be able to get content or this, that, and the other.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's, there's so many people, and I'm not saying anybody in particular, I'm not saying it's good, bad, or ugly, it's just the way I perceive the world, which is, there's very few people carving out bites themselves. There's very few people that are going, hey, where does everybody else go? I'm going in the opposite direction, right? you know, even for Canada, for me, I've been going to places that nobody else goes to until here as of late, where I'm like, ugh, gross, right? Go figure something out yourself. And in going to odd places, I go to all these different odd bodies of water where you don't have the history to go off of. You don't have other people's success as a calibrating component, but that allows you to kind of be on fish that are not getting hammered. Like you're saying, Jay, going to lakes where we've literally had people say, there are no big fish in there. There's not muskies in there. I mean, the best one ever is a dude that worked at the shop that lived there on that lake.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not worth fishing. And we popped a 50-inch trolling on cam. We used it in a vid. I was like, okay, well, that's good enough for me for a small Wisconsin lake. I'll take that. If there's no good ones in here, what's this one, right? Where getting off the beaten path and not following, and I say that because it's hard for, if you're like recreationally angling for muskies, you want to catch a muskie. This is the same premise of us saying going out and rehearsing, learning the baits. When you have that time, all you want to do is catch. That's what everybody wants to do. The whole point of this is to catch muskies. Well, if you're dealing with, and I talk about this in the book, and it's like in kind of the biases and I'm talking about cognitive biases and all this crazy shit, but it's true, which is groupthink mentality, right? So groupthink mentality is the glomming onto basically old information or rumors or this, that, and the other, opposed to going out and grinding out and figure it out. Now, and it goes back to what we say, well, you know, if you're doing what everybody else is doing, don't expect drastically different results, right? So if everybody's fishing Lake Suckatobin and everybody's catching 38s, I would say statistically speaking, you're most likely to go to Lake Suckatobin and catch a 38. Right?
Dead best, right?
Right. You see what I'm saying? It's mm-hmm. And it's kind of one of those things where how you're thinking about it opposed to just going, oh, where's the hot bite? Right? Again, goes back to choose your adventure. How do you want to do it? What do you want to do? If you just want to go catch one, that's absolutely fine. That's awesome. I will give you a high five. Nothing wrong with that. But if you're putting in a bunch of time in your following in other people's footsteps, you're not treading new water. Yeah, and
that's how the social media gossip thing kind of like controls musky fishing, because everyone's like tuned into like, well, this lake, and this lake, right, are happening. They're hot lakes, and quote unquote.
Hot lakes, and then hot spots. Not to
because they contain big fish, but no one's catching fish for the most part. So it's just like, well, I'm going to go out there that's the program.
That's the program, right? Which is followers, which is people not hoeing their own road. They're just freaking doing what others do and doing it poorly. And that's the nature of the beast, which is the first example of that was Mille Lacs.
Yeah, right. Just in the early 2000s, right?
Just way before kind of where we're at now. And I'm not saying there's good or there's bad. I'm just saying if I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing and I want to have better fishing or better experience, a lot of times just breaking away from that hive mind is the best thing you can do, right? Because you'll end up on kind of that same path. Like, again, don't expect dramatically different results. Everybody's doing this on this lake, and it's regional completely as well. Like, this is the hot lake. Okay. Yeah. I say it in the book, and it's again, there's no wrong or right way or no wrong or right pathway. But from the standpoint of by the time it reaches your ears, it's usually over. Right. If you're not right in the fray and you're not figuring it out yourself, by the time you find out about it, it is regurgitated, retreaded, spit out, re-swallowed guide talk from 4 months ago. And that goes too with like guiding, and Danny and I talk about this, and Herbie, everybody I know that's a guide talks about this, which is, okay, you can take a dude out, and it's, say it's Tuesday, and we go on a guide trip, and you go out and you get a real nice one on, let's just say, I'll pick a bait, a suic, 9-inch suic. We go out and catch a nice fish on a 9-inch suic, and we caught that fish in typical shallow weeds, right? The likelihood of that guy coming back with his own boat and fishing a 9-inch suic from the time that the sun rises to the time the sun sets and only fishing weeds is about 100%. It's about the closest to 100% I've ever seen, right? From a guide's perspective, is no, that was Tuesday. You see what I'm saying? No, that's what worked Tuesday, not the rest of the week. That worked during that period because forage was staged there. Wind had blown into the, you see what I'm saying? It's like, it's not about.
Yeah, reports are old. Yeah.
Right. Or even it's a guide. News. And I'm saying a report. Now I'm even taking it to the guide trip. Because Danny, and I'm not trying to speak for him, but conversations all the time, like, and other people I know too. I just took these guys yesterday and I go back and they're sitting on this and I go to this and I go hit something else and come back and they're on the other one. Well, yeah, you showed it to them and that's what they're going to do. And you shouldn't be shocked that they didn't extrapolate from that. Right? They didn't extrapolate from what you showed. Here's a deep point, or here's a structural element and the wind's blowing into this. And it's kind of like, on the guiding thing of that a lot of times, like we're talking about the hot bite or the hive mind, even from the standpoint of here's the cover we're fishing and here's the bait we're fishing at this speed. And here's why we're doing it and when we're doing it. Well, the wind's blowing into this, blah, 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 blah. Well, you take it to another day and they're doing the exact same thing in the exact same spots, but yet the conditions are not prevailing for that.
Sure,
100%. And so that's the whole crux of like, I'm on a massive tangent from freaking fishing pressured lakes, but it's also too the ability to shut that down and go, well, this is what I do and this is how I do it and I'm going to do it different. Right? I'm going to, not the guy, but whatever. You're going to go to the lake that's not popular. You're going to go to this lake or that lake. Or you're going to kind of approach it differently. And I think that's the best way to beat pressure is to completely fly your own flag, right? Hey, this is a trolling lake. We've talked about this before. We will get an email in the past. This is, I'm on a lake and it's a trolling lake. Go cast it, go jig it, right? They're seeing tons of trolling pressure. Well, don't troll at all. Right? Do it different. And I think that's the biggest kind of soapbox. We were talking about this shit earlier. And it's like, for me in my brain, I go, when you hear pressure, you see pressure and it's observed. I mean, you're visually seeing these other boats. I saw it a bunch in Canada and I see it everywhere. Okay. What are they doing? Okay. That's what they're doing. Right? They're, you can see the blades flickering in the sun. All right. Let's go do something else. Right? Because there's all, you know, it is about catching a fish and everybody has their own experience. But for me, a little bit of it is like, okay, I'm not going to sit there and just tread water on this and expect different results. And so I think like whether it be pressure, whether it be any kind of tough conditions, it's just the ability to kind of, or pulling it all together, Jay, from earlier, the confidence and the competence to do something different. You know? Yeah,
I could tie that in with a couple guys I know are mm-hmm. have exceptional records in terms of winning really big tournaments,
mm-hmm.
like really popular tournaments over the last couple decades.
Yeah,
there's two guys I know in particular, and I know because I talked to them in detail about how they won this one and how they won yeah. that one, what they did. And that's the exact same thing they did. Everyone's up shallow working bucktails. One guy had four guys, four boats around him. I think three in front and one in back of him, and they're all working the same weed line.
Yeah.
And he was doing something with soft plastics, as a matter of fact, that no one else was doing. This is a while ago, but caught a bunch of fish. It's not like he stumbled into one, you know.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, bam, four fish. Everyone else is like, what's he cheating or something?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're all within earshot of each other.
It's like, how is this happening? That's the same. That's the same thing of you know, back talking to Canada, right? Where's everybody going? Well, I'm not going there. You know, I mean, it's just. Again, choose your own adventure. It's fine if you're going to the popular destination, but you know, do you go to the offbeat? Are you willing to? And I think that, again, if the goal is to like have an adventure or do something cool or catch something really big, you got to break away from that. Because is everybody catching something big? Mm-hmm. Is everybody catching illegal? Is everybody catching 40 pounders? No. Is everybody, you know, catching four, whatever it is? Like, is everybody catching a Wisco 50? No, absolutely not. Well, if everybody's having those results, then that's not the way to do it. You know what I'm saying? It's like, statistically speaking, if everybody's not having those, it's just asinine. It's like, well, this is what works.
Yeah.
Oh, this is what works. This is the hot bite. Mouth breathing, they're all over this one, you know, and you just shake your head and go, okay, well, it's the results don't speak that, you know. I mean, I think a lot of this is everybody wants to have success, and I think to be successful in this and to consistently catch fish, you have to go against the flow. I don't mean the actual flag. I think you have to just kind of fly your own flag. Anyway, gosh. My goodness. Soapboxes for days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Chris, one more. I struggle with fishing after dark because I lose confidence as I cannot see where my bait is running. Right? How do you account for this? How are you knowing where presentations are, and what kind of structural situations make you feel confident for muskies after dark? Okay. Tire all together. Mm-hmm. That's the tip I'm on this week. I'm sorry. Competence and confidence. All right. Let's say we're fishing a bait. You should be able to shut your eyes at any given time and know what it's doing and where it's at. That's fishing after dark. So, I always count.
Yeah, and you should know exactly when it's 3 feet from your rod tip.
Yep, from feeling
it. You will. All you got to do is practice a little bit.
Don't get surprised or be. And again, it's a Gelbism. You know, Tom Gelb said there's time on the water and there's competent time on the water or something along those lines, right? Which is, are you again, part of the experience is staring at a squirrel. Oh, there's a squirrel, right? But are you focused in on what you're doing? Like if you're nuts enough to be listening to musky podcasts, I would think that you should make sure that you are spending time building competence with the different classes. I mean, that's the thing. God grief. It's all the same because it's all musky fishing, Jay. That's convenience of all this. It's lovely. But to the same regard, okay. You don't feel great about where your say your bulldog is running in the dark. Well, spend time during the daytime to go, this is what it feels like in the rod. Right? I can change. I can tell you when a bait is getting close to the boat from and again, even with a new bait, something I've never thrown before. Give me four or five casts, I'm paying attention during the retrieve for where the change
is. Yep,
it's not, there's a, bass fishing is a great example of this, and I'll put this to you, right? There are, again, Rick Klun, Powell, cohort at Livingston, he's a badass. He's as bad as they come. He's the goat of bass fishing, right? He's the best. And he and I talk about this crap all the time. we'll have him on again here soon, Jay, but whatever, of tactile feel and all this stuff you really get, and it's like time and experience and how it gets better and it gets different. But then you go on the flip side of that coin in the basketball, you got young guys that I've been guiding longer than they've been alive that are winning. They don't have 50 years. They have natural skill, but they also have the observational skills. You see what I'm saying? I mean, it's not time. Time is not, there are muskie anglers that are 60, 65, 70 years old. They've been doing it for 50 years that suck, right? Have no, that's true. And there's guys that have been doing it for 1 year that are badasses, right? That's just natural ability and skill. But I believe that you can overcome a lack of natural ability by being observant and practicing.
You talked about that earlier.
Yeah, it's, you know, the same point.
It is about filtering people's experiences and storing that data. Yeah,
and observing, paying attention. People, sure. I mean, paying, that's attention. The thing. You can be, you know, if don't half-ass it, whole-ass it, you can be a proficient and awesome at just about anything with enough repetition that is meaningful. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, I'd even say that, you know what, that's probably the best way to put it. I think confidence, blah, blah, blah. Which is like, are you observing your retrieves? Are you paying attention in a meaningful manner outside of, but damn, that looks good. I've heard that so many times, I could blow my brains out. That bait looks so good, I'd eat it. That's a good looking one. Okay, cool, bro. What's it doing? Right? If you stop it, what does it do? Right? If you rip it, what does it do? If you twitch it, what does it do? Right, just that, answering those questions is far more meaningful than going, damn, that looks good. I'm sorry, it's redneck voice because it's how rednecks talk, and that's all they talk about. Right.
Right. How long should I pause the bait? Yeah, there's a million things.
Does it rock when it falls? Does it fall head down, head first, sideways, backwards? What does it do? Observe. And that's a hard thing for musk anglers, because you want to be working a bait and you want to be working the mortal hell out of it, to sit there and go, okay, let me play with this in clear water by the boat. What does it do on freeze pull? What is blah, 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 blah. I think that's the most important thing you can do. We were talking about earlier. And that goes exactly to dude's night conundrum with night muskies, which is, yes, you've taken away the visual aspect. Don't get surprised by the bait, because if you're surprised by the bait or you don't know what's doing, how can we competently fish contours? How can we fish the outside edge of weeds if we don't know how fast our bulldog's falling or our tube is falling or have a feel for it, right? So now, and again, this is the suckitude of all things. None of it's overnight. And, you know, he's got these night fishing. It's a pun. But it doesn't happen overnight. It happens from repeatedly doing something, which is kind of the curse of musky fishing, of how many times do you get to go per week or even a month, right? Which goes back to what I'd said earlier, me and Jay were talking about. Hey, man, you probably ought to before season starts or before this, that, and the other, is spend that time and dial in on this stuff so you know, right? Because it's kind of like, I mean, I'll shut up here in a second on the soapbox, Jay, but a lot of these questions, or I don't say this dude's question, overarching questions in muskie fishing, can be answered by observation beforehand, or answering these questions beforehand. Perfect example thereof. What do I do with a Kraken in the figure eight? Okay. Or I was figure eighting and you know what I'm saying? Like, okay, before I even throw this bait, I'm going to figure it out by doing it. Right, I'm going to watch a video of Steve doing it, or I'm going to watch a video.
That's
somebody.
That's a very good example, you know, of that particular one. What's this Kraken going to do in the figure eight? It's not a bucktail, okay?
Right.
It's not a, you know, a depth rater.
Right.
Those are pretty straightforward, you know, in terms of, like, you know, figure eight, and you just keep the bait moving and you make some big loops and all that crap. But,
right, and then
a Kraken. No, be prepared for that beforehand. That's essential, because you know, there's a good chance 50% of the fish
are gonna be
and potentially catch are going to be caught at the boat. So,
and I say that because I said about the guide thing, and it's just the thought process, like the Herbie thing of, like, yesterday he calls me like, oh, we just they're rolling all over it, boat side. And you go, okay, what's that trigger? What's, you know, maybe they would have got them, maybe they didn't, but it's one of those scenarios where, you know, a little bit of forethought, a little bit of, you know, I say practice, but that's all I got is preparation, practice there, which is far easier to get what you want to happen instead of trying to make it up in real time. Never done this before. Let's see how it goes. J.S., he prepares to jump the Grand Canyon his first time on a motorcycle in 5 years. Let's see how it goes, folks. Right? I'm going to do something spectacular, but I've not practiced. Right? I'm going to say that one out loud. I'm going to do something spectacular off the cuff. Right? Doesn't happen very often in just about any walk or facet of life. You just don't, you know, every now and again, a guy will walk into a recording studio and just knock the windows out of the place with the, just never even tried, but not often. A schmuck like me needs to know what's going on, needs to have a little bit of practice or at least mental preparedness. And I think it's probably the answer is both, Jay. I mean, I keep circling back to this, that premise of how that is kind of encapsulating kind of the whole season thus far and the whole thing. But anyway, you know, think ahead and to the night fishing thing of just, you know, pick your presentations based on, he wouldn't know what presentations, but pick your presentations based on a little bit bigger and working slower. And I think that's the thing with night fishing in general. If you come back to it, slowing things down is going to change the running depth. So having that under your belt, thought about beforehand.
Correct. Yeah, right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You notice a lot of this is, I keep coming back to it. Maybe I'm wrong, Jay. Maybe I'm wrong. But a lot of this is what think before you act. Right.
Right.
Think before you do. And spend time practicing. Hard things for people to do. Most people are impulsive, and most people don't like practicing things.
No, I think you're right.
Which is, it is what it is. It's human condition. And that's why I love muskie fishing. It's such a great mirror on the boat. It's very funny. You kind of see what, you know, everybody's real, Jay, everybody's really ready to kill the first hour, especially guiding, you know, here.
No, yeah. I've heard this before.
Everybody is Rambo.
The first hour. That's the key phrase. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The first hour. Then you think we're going to see one comes hour two. Then the setting down and the crackers, right? Just going to have some crackers.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it unravels. That's the other fun part. Is, you know, that's why I love muskie fishing. It's a pain in the ass, and it's not only is it a physical stamina, it's a mental stamina game, and that's the thing.
It
and like
is.
I said, that you don't, you know, the fun thing is this, and so I'm not a complete kook. I can promise you, the pro bass guys I know, they practice. They practice the hell out of this stuff.
For sure.
They go out and they don't try to catch. And they practice and they practice and they go, hey, what do you do with it? Not me, because I don't know shit. But other pro bass, and they're practicing together. Or they're, you know what I'm saying? They're learning techniques from this guy and then developing techniques. And again, for a rec angler, that sucks. But, you know, I would rather do that once a season and really have that confidence. Hey, I know what this does. Hey, that, you know, I got, and again, it's like, okay, you throw a bulldog the first time. Man, I got snagged, and I know that's 12 feet deep over there, so I was letting it hang way too much. Lesson learned, right?
I've talked to people this year alone that have done that, that have done that approach, and they're like, my fishing has been so much better this year.
That's why I'm hammering on it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
100%.
That's so cool. It's the answer no one wants to hear, but it's the truth. And that's a lot of it. Of like, that's kind of like that step of where you go from, oh, I have no, what do you eat? Well, you ate a bucktail over the week. It's cool. Why? where, how, when, what are you doing? Yeah, so that's the thing. And it's awesome, Jay, that you've been hearing it too, because that's definitely a commonality there of like, once you kind of get through that and you are willing to get, you're willing to put, dude, you're talking about 2-3 hours max to go through the entire assortment of most boats, if not 2 hours, right? And critique and go, that doesn't look like it did in the video. Maybe I ought to try it a different way. You know, that's all it takes. So awesome. Didn't know we were going down that rabbit hole. Never know what we're doing, but we just do it, Jay.
Yeah.
Doing it all for the muskies. Hey. Good Lord.
Well, on that note.
On that sour note.
I'm going to go off fishing for a little bit here.
Get him, killer. Later.
Alrighty. All right. See ya. Let the muskies hit the floor. Let the muskies hit the floor.